1 2 1 2. Yes. And I'll go ahead and work the microphone and hold it for you guys.
Should I introduce myself? I don't need to have a name or anything.
No, you don't have to. You can even use a fake name. It doesn't matter. So.
Okay. My name's Bruce. I'm sitting here with James Latham, and I've been a fan of Radio for Peace International for quite a while and really appreciated what they stood for. And James, I know that in the last few months at RFPI were very, very trying for you, and you had a tremendous amount of problems with the University for Peace. Would you elaborate on some of the things that happened in the last few months for us?
Sure, Bruce, and thank you. The last 2 months for Radio for Peace International and the staff and supporters that were there was extremely trying and a very passionate time for the people who really cared about the radio station. The University for Peace had stepped up again a few more notches its harassment of the radio station, and as some of the listeners have heard from earlier descriptions, we had our gate locked by the University for Peace. In the last couple, one, two, oh, we can just start again. One, two, one, two. It seems to be working okay now. It could be this thing was a bit cold. Okay.
Should we just start over?
Start again.
Okay. I'm Bruce Beinlich in Costa Rica, and I'm with James Latham. He was director of Radio for Peace International, and I listened to Radio for Peace International for a long time and got my slant on the world news from a different perspective and really respected the things that Radio for Peace International stood for. And now they're not on the air. And James, I have a question for you. I know that in the last few months at RFPI, they were very trying, and the University for Peace really gave you many, many problems in what you were trying to do. Would you mind elaborating on some of the things that happened during those last few months?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Bruce. The difficulties we had in the last couple months, really, of RFPI's operation were extreme in nature because of the kind of gearing up of harassment that the University for Peace perpetrated against the station. One of the very beginning of this was, as some of the listeners to these tapes know, they chained the gate out in front. After the negotiations failed, and the university was very apparent, didn't want to really seriously negotiate, merely stall this off for several months, they came out to the radio station and barbed wired the fence and the gate and the perimeter around the radio station, posting guards and instructing them that no one was to enter into the station. Now, what that did, what occurred from that was that we were having more difficulties getting food and supplies into the staff. Ruddy Seeley and myself were there, and other people that would come and go if they could get in, sneak in somehow, would be there. But generally, the two of us were sort of locked in, and we were informed that if we left, we would never be able to return, and we had a lot of equipment inside the station. More than that was the other forms of harassment. The University for Peace had instructed a groundskeeper to cut our telephone lines. These are telephone lines that the radio station paid for and had installed. They told them to cut those lines with a machete and also to cut the water for the station. that we had a water line coming down from up above that passed through the university, and was a plastic tube, and this guard cut that line as well. But more important, this particular groundskeeper, his name was Giovanni, his first name, was also asked by the University for Peace management if he would set fire to the building. And they was also asked if he would bring down the tower. Our RFPI's towers are quite large, 200-foot affairs, the largest, and there are several other 100-foot towers. And these were within, well, within other people's property, within public roads, power lines, and it would be a very dangerous situation to occur. Now, we know this happened because Giovanni told Willy Barrantes, a local resident, that he had been asked by the vice rector at the University for Peace at the time to do this action. This shows sort of a kind of an intense, aggressive nature on behalf of the management of the University for Peace. It was very frightening for us. And the gardener, to his credit, said he wouldn't do this. He refused to do these actions, these violent acts against us, and stated that, you know, it could hurt somebody, and he wouldn't think of that. He mentioned this to Willy Barrantes in Ciudad Colón, a town nearby, with witnesses to this. So we know that this occurred, and we were told about it. At this time, Bruce, we had interns that were working at the station, which we sent home virtually. It was to the point where it was perhaps becoming dangerous for them to be at the radio station, and these were young women in their 20s. They were really remarkable and very talented, and had come to learn peace journalism at the radio station. So, as a director of the project, and I felt responsible for the security and safety of our workers. And at that point in time, Roddy Seeley and myself stayed on inside the station without water, without electricity. The electricity was cut. And we were collecting rainwater from the roof. Now, for the toilet, for sanitation, for drinking. We had no water coming in. They would not allow people to bring water into the station. And I got to say, this is not a very healthy thing necessarily, collecting rainwater off of the metal roof to drink. I think it was affecting both our health in that respect. It was a very difficult time. People had to get food to us in whatever way we could. We had a little bit of food left. The aggressive nature of these acts towards the station was very psychologically troubling to us, too. At one point, Ruddy's son tried to get some gasoline for us, some white gas, to run a little Coleman stove that we had for cooking. We had no cooking facilities there. And he had very bravely climbed over a fence that was crisscrossed with a bird really probably would have troubles trying to fly through this. A small bird couldn't get through, and he had to climb over the fence and try to get up to us with this gasoline. It was very a very brave thing, I think, considering. As we mentioned in the past, these guards had guns. At that particular point, I don't remember seeing them, but we didn't know if they had them or not. Andy, walked past the guard. The guard tried to stop him. He walked past the guard, though, and got past him and brought us some gasoline to run our camping stove so they would be able to cook a meal. We had, one of the first warm meals for a while there. He visited with us, brought us water and supplies, and so it was good. But the actions of the University for Peace continued to tick up in this, and we continued on for a number of days in this kind of mode of trying to survive in this very hostile environment with a fence strung up around us. Our communications had been cut off. We had no way of communicating with the outside world. At some point, I was told by some people trying to call us that I was told by people who were trying to call us that the phone lines actually was routed, into the University for Peace. And these kind of conditions carried forth in the last days of Radio for Peace. We were off the air. It was dark. We were lighting our way by candle. Very unhealthy conditions, both psychologically and physically. That was going on, and again, this was perpetrated, against us and against the, there was acts of vandalism, I guess you would say, cutting our telephone lines, cutting our water lines. I'm very thankful that groundskeeper, employee of the University for Peace, did not act on the request that was made of him to fall the tower, which could have hurt people and definitely damaged a lot of property. It would for tons of metal falling out of the sky from 200 feet, it could do an incredible amount of damage. So this was the last days of RFPI. Very sad to see something like the UN University for Peace perpetrating this kind of actions against us. And I think really if people at the UN knew of what really was going on, the occurrence, they would be shamed by it, ashamed by their leadership for permitting such a thing. And honestly, it's truly a black mark in the history of the UN, which is a tragedy. We were a station that broadcast UN programs. Many of our listeners wrote to the Secretary General saying, "We don't want you to eliminate the voice of the UN, one of the few places we could hear UN radio programs. We don't want you to stop that." But this was the actions of a top single individual. Okay, for a pause.
Full story for you that you guys haven't heard yet.
Yes, that'd be good.
Well, James, that was during the dry season here in Costa Rica, and if you had your lines cut and no water, and you were chained in there, and nobody could get in or out except Andy sneaking in, you didn't even have water to flush toilets or to drink or anything like that. These are just incredible situation here. Human rights being violated right and left. What I can't understand is what caused this to happen in the first place. If this radio station, which carried UN programs and supported the UN and was backed by the University for Peace of the United Nations, what caused this rift to make them all of a sudden go, "Oh, we don't want anything to do with you, and we're going to basically do whatever is necessary to shut you down"? I don't understand. Can you explain that to me?
Bruce, I can try. Let me say there are many people, our friends and associates and colleagues who have put forth many theories as to why. Publicly, the University for Peace itself has not really explained that. They've avoided answering that question of why. When asked by reporters in the local newspapers, they simply say we don't have to give a reason, or it was just our decision to do that. But it doesn't answer the question as to why. Let me give you some of the theories that many people have put forth, and I will also explain the more recent some findings that we have discovered that may lead to answering that question. Some people say that Marie Strong, being very much involved with world banking, being an advisor to the World Bank, involved in the World Economic Forum, is a very strong promoter, and indeed he is, of globalization. He's an industrialist. He's worked in the oil companies and power companies and has a background in those organizations, those companies. And it very may well be that he felt uncomfortable, as some thought and put forth, with our broadcast criticizing rampant destructive globalization, our coverage of the anti-globalization movement. He may have felt very uncomfortable with that, to the point where he acted on this. Some have put forth that. Others have considered the possibility that the University for Peace is interested in training, military-type training, at the facilities, since it has immunities. It has UN immunities, the ground does. It's not well supervised in many respects. The actions that Marie Strong does and oversees at the grounds of the university is not subject to really criticism or any rules from Costa Rica. In a like way, the UN and UNESCO and other UN agencies really don't have a clear idea of what's going on at the United Nations University for Peace. They do have representatives that come there once a year, but and spend a few days on campus, and I think go away feeling somewhat pleased with it all. But they really don't have an idea of what's happening on a day-to-day basis. Certainly they didn't know that their vice rector has requested such actions as this vandalism of our station and the cutting down of the towers and things like this. So this may be a reason that the university didn't want a radio station and a group of journalists staying in their backyard watching these kind of actions of setting up police and military training are doing this. And in the past, the university has been hosted a School of the Americas meeting on the campus. That is a fact. It's on the internet. If anybody wants to check it out, they can see that has been posted. That's one yet another theory. There, perhaps recently, what we found is that an interesting person, interesting and quite involved in many different political games, came in with Marie Strong in 1999-2000 year to the University for Peace. This is a fellow by the name of Bill Martin. Now, Bill Martin came to one of the meetings, I believe it was in 2000, spoke to some of the people up at the University for Peace. I myself had been told, that's who that gentleman is across the room. Bill Martin, his background is that he served as a national security on the executive director of the National Security Council under Ronald Reagan, along with worked alongside of people like Poindexter and Ollie North and several other right-wing ideologues of the Reagan era. He also served as George Bush's campaign advisor on energy, and in fact has been appointed a position in the current Bush administration as a sort of a director or oversighting of kind of fast-tracking nuclear power. He's basically a lobbyist for many power companies, oil companies, nuclear companies, power companies, natural gas companies, in a whole host, a list. If you go on the internet and you check out Your Energy Future, you'll see nearly 1,000 of these companies. All of them are somewhat what you would say is dirty industries. They're not environmentally directed industries and companies. The connections with George Bush are very solid, very strong. Some people believe that Bill Martin is going to bring in the military training to the University for Peace. We've known for a long time that the U.S. government has wanted to set up again a School of the Americas-like training, more centrally located in Latin America. Costa Rica would be an ideal location, and from their viewpoint of doing that. But it would have to; it'd be very difficult because most countries would not like that. But again, Costa Rican government has no say-so over what goes on at the University for Peace grounds. Bill Martin came to the university in June. In July, a month later, the radio station received its notice that it was had to leave. I don't think that was an accident in timing. I think that there was definitely some correlation between Bill Martin's visit and our getting the eviction, so-called eviction notice from the University for Peace. And I think that there is something to be said with all these theories that we've just talked about. I think that there is a little bit of truth perhaps in all of them, and including the Bill Martin interest, even if Bill Martin himself never gave Maurice Strong the orders. Maurice may have felt uncomfortable with the radio station broadcasting programs that took a critical look at many of these same companies and industries on the air and their damage to the environment. Now, it should be pointed out, it's very interesting that Maurice Strong is associating with people like this. Well, of course, he has had the business background in those fields, but he is reportedly to be the big environmentalist, a big mover in the environmental field. These industries definitely are not that, and I think most environmentalists would easily see through any kind of facade of this kind of action. So to answer your question, why? There perhaps are many reasons, and it's very complex, I think, but I think that these things that we just discussed all play in to the... Yes. And, you know, it should be pointed out that the radio station, besides our motto of censorship is not an option, we also believe in peace and justice. And as we said during this siege, that the University for Peace's motto now is peace and security. Security, security, security. They tail everything that they produce up there with that term security. And again, this is sort of the military or security leaning or police kind of force leaning in that direction of what the university seems to be going into. And I think that that's a real tragedy for the United Nations to be participating in such a thing, as I think it is a tragedy and a mark against them, as I said before, to have shut down a radio station that was dedicated to peace and human rights. This kind of action, for my own self, my own personal self, has really tainted my view and perspective of this marvelous institution that could be an incredible institution to help mankind. And I believe that it has done some really good things. But now I believe that the heart and soul of the United Nations has to be kind of questioned in the direction that they're going. And it's very frightening to me to see this with people such as Murray Strong up in the power structure at the top of the United Nations and his particular direction that we see him, you know, sort of moving into and moving the university in for peace into. It's very frightening that such an important institution or organization in the world could be faltering and going in that direction.
So then you feel that big banks, major families in the world, and just the quest of going after money and not caring about anything is some of the motivating factors behind the university, for the United Nations today?
I think today what is happening is that there's probably a lot of influence from those groups that you mentioned. And I think that the United Nations should be an organization of the people and for the people on the planet and for the planet itself. It's important for us all to think about this and to realize is who pays for the United Nations? Is it the corporations or is it not us? I believe it is us, the people, that pay for the United Nations through our taxes, which then are turned over to our particular governments and then sent in. It is an institution that should be really responsible to the people and not select groups or corporations. Corporations should be completely out of the United Nations. It should not be part of the United Nations. Somewhere in the history, and I don't know where this happened, but somewhere, corporations have been elevated above people. And they shouldn't. They are not a living thing, and they only have their own interest of making higher profits and such at mind. And if this institution that was created by people with people's resources all of a sudden starts to be less responsive to the people and more responsive to corporations, and I think that inside the UN system there is definitely a leaning in that direction now, and that's very frightening, through the corporation's man, sort of selected representative being Murray Strong. When that starts to occur, and NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and non-profit humanitarian organizations are starting to get squeezed out of the UN system, then I think we should really wake up and start realizing that there is something underfoot and something that's very unsettling about this and about the UN that is going on. And I would like to see, you know, people to be more aware of that and that, you know, that this is really occurring. In the last days of Radio for Peace International, we had to make a decision to sort of cut and run, save our equipment, save a part of the station, certainly save the passion for it, and relocate, rebuild, and continue on. And it was a very hard thing to tear apart something that so many people had invested in. It wasn't me. It wasn't a private company. It wasn't a few people. On their website, the University for Peace states that we don't know who these people were, just a few North Americans or foreigners that had come in and sort of set up camp here or something was sort of the gist of what they responded to. We had contracts with them. We knew who we were. Our organization had changed names once during this process, but we're the same people, and the same people that served on the board, and we were very well established. We had our own nonprofit operating. We had contracts with the United Nations, with various agreements of cooperation with various groups, the Red Cross, the United Nations, UNESCO, Southern Poverty Law Center. The list is huge. This type of action and you're either with us or against this type action is very very troubling, I think, very concerning, coming from an institution calling itself the University for Peace. This is not the way one should be running business in an institution. A university calling itself anything shouldn't have armed guards posted at gates. A institution calling itself University for Peace should never have such a thing happening. It should have human rights. It should have the ability for its workers to form a union. It should have some redress for those people who get fired from that institution. It should have a respect for human dignity. And somewhere in this process, they've lost that. And that's really tragic. The first victim of this whole situation of Maurice Strong's administration has been the University for Peace. The radio station and many other people have suffered now because of this agreement. The thousands of people that have invested money into building up the radio station and to building up the University for Peace have lost, and that's very tragic, I think, and I'm very saddened by it.
Well, it seems to me that they've pretty much crippled you and put you out of business. As far as I know, on shortwave, there's very few stations that I'm able to listen to and other English-speaking people are able to listen to that give a slant on the news that's factual and not controlled by the media organizations in the United States that only give one perspective. Have they in fact crippled you? Or what's the future for something like RFPI? I know at one time you were even shot at. Mm-hmm. Your life has been put in danger here. Have these big World Bank banking institutions and the things I mentioned earlier, have they won?
They have only won this round. They have effectively shut down the station, silenced a voice, censored a voice. In doing so, they have broke their own UN Declaration of Human Rights in doing this, which is a tragedy. They have, in the eyes of many people inside the University for Peace, in the community, they have made a very disgraceful performance in these last few months, they have taken something and tainted it. And it's going to take quite a bit of time for them to, kind of recover from that. In terms of the radio station, it's going to take some time for us to recover, to regroup. We do understand, because of the intention that was spent on us, that it was an acknowledgement in a way. Yes, you are a problem. You are questioning. You are making a difference. You as a radio station are important enough that we're going to give it a considerable amount of attention. We're hiring an attorney just to work on your case for a year and a half to get rid of you. This kind of attention that the station has achieved is like an acknowledgement that we were on the right track, that we were making a difference, and that the station was important and was going about making change, positive change in the world. So what are we going to do? Well, we have many elements of the radio station. Some listeners are probably not aware of all of this, that we had a training course going where we had some 300 journalists trained at RFPI that are out there in the field, very supportive, doing work. And we call that the Institute for Progressive Communications. It was a essential element of the radio station to produce a number of journalists around the world that could report back to us and report back on these important issues of peace and human rights and the protection of the environment. That is going to continue on. Our training will continue. We will advance that and continue training more interns in the near future. That is in the process right now as we speak. And we're combining with other organizations to even strengthen that particular part of RFPI. The internet casting, which we experimented with and broke many new ground with in the past, is going to continue on. We hope to have that up and running within the early to the mid part of 2004. With connections that are quite large, up to 5,000 people being able to connect at once. So our internet casting will continue on, and perhaps even people are hearing this on the internet cast. We have a lot of belief in some of this technology that it can be utilized for peaceful purposes, and we're going to really bend it towards that. The radio part of the station and the programming part is going to take a little more time. In terms of our programming and our interviews, we're going to continue that right away in doing investigative journalism in the fields that we feel are important. In terms of the radio station, that's going to be later. We hope to have it done in sometime in 2004 and back on the air. It's going to take a considerable amount of money. We have people working on trying to get the funds to get that all up and running. And so the voice of Radio for Peace can once again return to the shortwaves. All the equipment is there. It's being stored, looked after. The talent is there. The people that worked at RFPI are still around, willing to do it. It's a matter of replacing those buildings and getting on the air again. And we vow that the station will return. We will not allow censorship of people who have in their hearts the work for the betterment of the planet. We will not agree to censorship, be it perpetrated by the UN or Marie Strong or the University for Peace. These voices won't be squelched. They'll return to the airways. We found in the past that the radio station is an incredible has an incredible resiliency. It has bounced back from some real tough times before, and every time I've seen it bounce back, it's bounced back much stronger than before, much more solid, much more stable. So we're looking forward to the return of it to the airways, the full return and full operation of Radio for Peace International.
Okay. Ready?
Sounds good to me.
No, you want to say anything? Get the microphone over there to him.
Should I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead, ask him a question. I could ask him a question. Whatever. Yeah. We'll switch places here or something, and I can get next.
we'll put this in there because I know Scott wants to add all these voices. He has a whole bunch. Thanks, Bruce. You did a good job. Well, I know, but I go on and on and on and on and on.
Because
I have
that. That was the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Right.
So that went well. Yeah. And by the way, I have 6 or 7 hours from my history as a young activist all the way through to the end of this. So anyway, we're setting up in the mountains, high in the mountains in Costa Rica, and with some very special people. Ruddy is setting next to me. And Ruddy and I spent some time together in these last months protecting a station that meant so much to our listeners. And I certainly want to thank you, Ruddy, for all your help, for saving the equipment and thus saving the station for the future. I wonder if you could make some comments about your experience and how you started listening to the station.
I just discovered the station many years ago when I was just DXing, looking around for some shortwave radio stations. Fortunately, I ran across RFPI, and this was right down my interest level and what I was interested in. So I was very glad to find it. And I heard Noam Chomsky and Zinn, and heard many people, and I was very pleased and happy to finally tie into some place where I could get some news that was not slanted. And actually, the last days we had at RFPI, actually, we heard that, pardon me, we heard that the station was under duress and coming under attack. So we quickly went there. We hadn't visited before ever. We just had been cheering them on from the sidelines and calling once in a while. And so when we heard that they were having some troubles, we went over to see if we could help in any way. And my wife and I went there, and we found that and my son drove us over, actually. And so we saw that there was a need to save the station, actually, because we were very much under attack, as James has pretty well laid out, that they locked, chained the gate, then they wired the gate, then they cut off our water, and they cut off our power. And they cut off. They tried to cut all of our lines, but for some reason or other, the man's knife, machete, did not cut through one line. So we did have one line for a while that we kind of were very careful with, so that we didn't lose that one also. And so we did have one little bit of communication with the outside that we could call once in a while and receive calls. So that was the only plus we had in that whole time, and it became more difficult all the time. And they even brought the police in when we tried to have gas, so we could cook our food and run a little plant, so that we could do a little bit of interneting. So we were very much under siege, and we just stayed in there. We did not want to leave because they told us that we would lose everything if we did. So we just kept somebody there all the time, and then finally we were able to pack everything up, cut and run, and save the equipment. We couldn't save the building. That's the only thing we couldn't save. We saved some of the furniture and all of the equipment that was in it that was useful for starting up another station. So, as I said, the only comment I could really make about everything that's been said so far that I've heard is that RFPI is coming back. It was spoken of in the past tense. RFPI was this and was that. And, all right, we've run into a hiatus, but it won't be long, and we'll be up and running again, delivering the straight material. And thank you, James.
Thank you, Ruddy, and the whole family for your participation. I wanted to add that another interesting little perspective on this is that early on there were theories that, well, the university wanted those buildings so that they could house students or whatever. And if you go by the University for Peace and look at the buildings, they sit idle, boarded up, and not used. And so there was no immediate need for the university for this. They had plenty of land and plenty of opportunity to build their own buildings in the way they would like. But it went beyond just moving the radio station. It went to the point where the actions of the University for Peace in the way they did this, without offering compensation to the Radio for Peace and Earth Communications, this method was more than just, we're not going to pay, but we also wanted, it seemed like they wanted to do damage to the station in some way to make sure that it didn't go back on the air from another location by not offering this compensation. The compensation would have guaranteed our smooth transition from the facilities we were at to new facilities. And since they broke the international agreement and by not compensating us that they had signed and we had signed, this was a very, very unfortunate situation. So I want to thank you, Ruddy, for your participation and your help, for your companionship in those last days, very troubled last days of the radio station, and of course for your continued support as RFPI sort of re-energizes and continues on into a very much needed role of serving the people on the planet valuable, accurate information about bringing about a healthier world for us all to live in. So thank you for all the help.
Okay. All right. That's how it's done.